بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، والصلاة والسلام على نبيه وحبيبه مولانا أبي القاسم محمد. على أهل بيتي الطيبين المعصومين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. After this eloquent introduction, I'm at a loss for words. It's like when I'm speaking Farsi in Iran and somebody says, "Oh, your Farsi is so good," all of a sudden I forget it. I start making mistakes. So I have to collect myself before I start. Allah says in the Holy Quran, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, وَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ فَيُوَفِّيهِمْ أَجُورَهُمْ وَاللَّهُ لَا يُحِبُّ الظَّالِمِينَ. Allah says, but as for those who have faith and do righteous deeds, He will pay them their reward in full, and Allah does not love the wrongdoers. And the Prophet of Allah is reported to have said, أَوْثَقُوا أُرَى الْإِيمَانِ أَلْحُبُّ فِي اللَّهِ وَالْبُغْضُ فِي اللَّهِ وَتَوَالِي أَوْلِيَاءِ اللَّهِ وَتَبَرِّي مِنْ أَعْدَاءِ اللَّهِ. The firmest handhold of faith is to love for the sake of Allah and to hate for the sake of Allah, to befriend Allah's friends and to renounce His enemies. Now when somebody asked me about doing a talk on supporting the oppressed, I found that a very, very difficult subject because it's almost a cliche. Everybody agrees, support the oppressed. Support the oppressed, one can say, is like a speech within itself. I can come up here and say, oh, brothers and sisters, support the oppressed, thank you very much, and I'm gone. That's all you need. And I was wondering how to approach this subject, in a way that would shed light upon our own particular current situation and our own relationship to the Imam. And so I thought about the concept of love, the concept of friendship, the concept of hate, the concept of having good relations with each other. And when we mention hate with respect to religion, a lot of people get scared. A lot of people get afraid. It's like for some of myself and some of the black brothers, when we hear about slavery or slavery to Allah, we want to take off. What? Because of that emotional hatred, that emotional connection that we have had in our past to slavery, when we hear of the concept slavery, even in a positive sense, it's quite hard to take. Want to be a slave to who? Similarly, with the idea of hate. You see, because this religion in general, and Islam in particular, in the West, all the negative atrocities committed in the name of religion, all of the wars committed in the name of religion, have always been associated with hate. So, what they're actually promoting is a kind of a Christian concept of religion in general. When you talk to a Christian, he says, my religion is about love. I love everybody. And there's no room in my heart for hate. But this is an erroneous concept. Because if there is no hate, there can be no love. If there is no up, there can be no down. We live in a world where contradictories live side by side, where opposites live side by side, and that's how we understand ourselves. You can't understand good unless you know bad. You can't understand bad unless you know good. And hate is stereotyped. The whole idea of hate in religion is stereotyped. People want you to think that hate in religion means fanaticism, means cruelty, means bloodshed, means war, means hatred. But hate is not really that. Hate is simply being repelled from that which is ugly, being repelled from that which is distasteful. I hate pork. So you put pork in my meal, I will not eat it. It doesn't mean to say I will go out there and torture a pig. Give salawat to the Holy Prophet Muhammad. So, love. What is love? What is love? Love. Love is or can be seen as the attraction or the gravitation towards beauty. You can't have love if you don't have beauty. Beauty initiates, motivates love. You cannot have love if you don't have beauty. And when one witnesses beauty, that movement towards beauty is what we call love. What is beauty? Beauty, as some of the Urafa have said, is the outward manifestation of the perfection of something. The outward manifestation of perfection. So beauty is perfection. That's what beauty is. Take a mole, for example. And some of you people who have been in some of my talks have Listen, you heard this before. Take a mole. When you take a mole and you isolate a mole, a mole is a pretty ugly thing, you know. A mole is a abnormal growth of flesh. It has a different color to the rest of your body. That's what a mole is. But if you have a mole right here, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. If you have the same mole on the eyelid, you're looking around for plastic surgery. Because the mole right here is where it's supposed to be. And that's what beauty is. Everything in its proper place. One of the most beautiful actresses in the world, Sophia Loren. When you look at Sophia Loren and you isolate every part of her face, she got a big nose, she got extra thick lips. But when you put them all together on that face, you got beauty. And this is what beauty is. Everything in its proper place. And that is another definition for the concept of justice in Islam. The concept of justice in Islam does not mean equality between two things, as they say in the West, because this is a quantitative understanding of justice. Justice in Islam is putting things in its proper place. That's justice. One day I was talking to a friend of mine in my younger days, and he said, I could handle more than one wife. And he said, yeah. I said, yeah. He said, what do you have to do? I said, well, you know, if I spend a certain amount of money on this one, I buy a dress for this one, I buy a similar cost of a dress for that one. He says, that's not justice. I said, why? He said, because not everyone might like dresses. Oh. He says, justice is putting things in its proper place. Treating everybody as they're supposed to be treated. And justice is beauty. Salamat. Now, not only do we love beauty, but we love things, and beauty being perfection, keep that in mind. We love those things that contribute to perfection. We love those things that contribute to perfection. So we love food. We love sex. We love clothing. And so forth and so on. Why? Because they contribute to our perfection as human beings. Without food, we die. Without sexual relationships, our race will come to an end. And so we love these things because they contribute to our perfection. Sometimes what happens is that sometimes we love those things for themselves. This is an error. We must love the whole and not the part. The part contributes to the whole, and we love the part because it contributes to the whole. So how do we respond to the imperfect? How do we respond to the not beautiful? How do we respond to the things that do not contribute to our perfection? We respond to them by aversion. We respond to them by aversion. And this aversion we call hate. So we hate ignorance, therefore we support illiteracy. Sorry, we hate illiteracy, and therefore we support education and so forth. And this is necessarily so because, again, we are in the world of opposites. Now, with respect to the attraction to beauty, What is the goal of attraction to beauty? We are attracted to beauty, and where does this attraction lead? Where does attraction to perfection lead? The attraction to perfection leads to unity. It leads to unity. It is not like, for example, an art connoisseur. He sees a beautiful painting, he wants to buy it, and he wants to possess it. And we have this error in thinking that we can possess, we can own beauty. This is an error. The art connoisseur himself is living in an environment, in an era, that is an era. Because before this present time, the post-Renaissance period, art wasn't something you collected and put on a wall. Art wasn't something you kept in your house and waited for the price to go up so you can sell. Art was something you lived. You decorated your implements. Your clothes reflected meaning. You put meaning into your buildings. This was art. You never, before this modern period, had the idea of an art gallery. And why you have this type of situation today is because we have people who are removed themselves from the concept of beauty. Because beauty, perfection, is integrative and integrating. Beauty, perfection, is something you participate in. When you are attracted to the beautiful, when you are attracted to the perfect, you too share in that perfection. You too become perfect. Allah is calling us to be like Him. You cannot love somebody or something that you have no commonality with. Those people who were here last week heard the hadith that where Allah said, in the hadith Qudsi, where Allah said, "My servant does not cease to approach me in supererogatory acts of worship until I become the eyes by which he sees, the hands by which he acts, the feet by which he walks." In other words, you become like God. You become God-like. Salawat. And so, the object of love is for us to integrate with the beloved, to become one with the beloved. And this is why we fast in Ramadan. It is said that the fast of Ramadan is a time when we are the guests at God's table. The guests at God's table. It's very interesting. We are the guests at God's banquet, and we're not eating any food. Why? Because we are stepping, as it were, into the shoes of God. We are trying to be God-like. God doesn't need food, so we don't eat food. Allah doesn't need drink, so we don't have drink. Allah does not need a mate, so we don't have intimate relationships during the daytime of Ramadan and so forth and so on. What are we doing? We are trying to be God-like, and in making ourselves closer to Allah, more like Allah, we are able to establish communication with Allah. Now, when we analyze this whole idea of love, we realize something. That you have no love unless you have complementarity. You must have something common. Some elements in your personality, in your psyche, in common with the beloved. And if you don't have those elements, you cannot be beloved by the beloved. Neither can you love the beloved. So when we're talking about loving our imams, we are just spewing air when we say we love our imams and not have any commonality with them. And herein lies the practical aspect of love. Now, I'm sure many of you have been in love, are in love, or want somebody to love you. Right? So, what do? This person isn't paying you much attention. So you find out, okay, they like a particular singer. So you go and find out all you can about this singer. And you get familiar with it. So this is something you have in common. This person likes people in a certain kind of jeans. So you definitely go and you get them jeans so they can see you in it. This person likes to talk politics. So you go and study up all the politics they can talk. So like, you know, because yes, so what's your opinion about so-and-so? Yes, yes, yes. Right? What is your intention for that person to love you? In other words, to be loved by somebody and also to love someone, one has to know, what is that person like and how can I be like them? And when I become like them, they will notice me. So love is something you can actually generate in yourself and in somebody else. But first, you have to adjust yourself to that person. And this is what we have to do with our iman. And so, the object of love is for us to integrate with the beloved, to become one with the beloved. And this is why we fast in Ramadan. It is said that the fast of Ramadan is a time when we are the guests at God's table. The guests at God's table. It's very interesting. We're the guests at God's banquet, and we're not eating any food. Why? Because we are stepping, as it were, into the shoes of God. We are trying to be God-like. God doesn't need food, so we don't eat food. Allah doesn't need drink, so we don't have drink. Allah does not need a mate, so we don't have intimate relationships during the daytime of Ramadan and so forth and so on. What are we doing? We are trying to be God-like, and in making ourselves closer to Allah, more like Allah, we are able to establish communication with Allah. Now, when we analyze this whole idea of love, we realize something. That you have no love unless you have complementarity. You must have something common. Some elements in your personality, in your psyche, in common with the beloved. And if you don't have those elements, you cannot be beloved by the beloved. Neither can you love the beloved. So when we're talking about loving our imams, we are just spewing air when we say we love our imams and not have any commonality with them. And herein lies the practical aspect of love. Now, I'm sure many of you have been in love, are in love, or want somebody to love you. Right? So, what do? This person isn't paying you much attention. So you find out, okay, they like a particular singer. So you go and find out all you can about this singer. And you get familiar with it. So this is something you have in common. This person likes people in a certain kind of jeans. So you definitely go and you get them jeans so they can see you in it. This person likes to talk politics. So you go and study up on the politics they can talk. So like, you know, because they say, yes, so what's your opinion about so-and-so? Yes, yes, yes. Right? What is your intention? For that person to love you. In other words, to be loved by somebody, and also to love someone, one has to know, what is that person like, and how can I be like them? And when I become like them, they will notice me. So love is something you can actually generate in yourself and in somebody else, but first you have to adjust yourself to that person. And this is what we have to do with our imams. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, Inna Allah farada wilayatana wa awjaba mawaddatana. Allah has ordained our guardianship and He has made loving us an obligation. He has made loving us an obligation. Many of us think love is something, you know, you're falling. Love is something that happens. Love happens to you because you're not in control of yourself. You can intensify your love. You can make somebody not love you. This is a good point you should know. If you don't want somebody to love you, you just do everything they don't like. They want to put a lot of distance between you and them. It's a secret. You want to split up with somebody, is what you do. You want to intensify a relationship with somebody, this is what you do. You do more of what they like. You become what they like. And you're going to get their love. Salawat. So, there's this commonality. Take, for example, courage. Brave people love brave people. Brave people love brave people. Can you say that again? Brave people don't love cowards. Brave people do not love cowards. Now you might think, because of the principle of complementarity, cowards would love cowards. But that's not the case. Cowards hate cowards. They like brave people too. So the complementary points, the complementary elements, must be positive. They must be positive. Ignorant people don't like ignorant people. They like smart people. Because they want to be smart. So it must be positive. And then in that positivity, there is hierarchy. So all the brave people like heroes. Because the hero is the highest level of the brave. And then among the heroes, there are levels too. And these levels are based upon what? It is based upon the principle by which the hero displayed his heroism. So you might find somebody who risks his life to save a kid on the street. It's a hero. Then you might find somebody who risks his life to save a country. That's much higher. Then you might find somebody who risks his life to defend a principle. A principle. That's even higher. And this is why we love Imam Hussein so much. Because he's the hero of heroes. So we see these positive qualities go in higher and higher hierarchies. And the higher the hierarchy, the more subtle, the more spiritual, the more universal the quality, and the much more profound the influence upon society. Give salawat to the Prophet Muhammad and his father. perfection, when we merge with that perfection, we experience bliss. Love is always something pleasurable. It is always blissful. And it affects your state. There's a hadith by the Holy Prophet that where he says, whoever aspires to live my life, to die my death, to enter the paradise that my Lord has promised me, and to grasp the handhold which my Lord has appointed, should take Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. And his successors after him as his guardians. Here the Prophet is talking about us, his followers, trying to be like him. And he's giving us a path to him. And this path to him, this path of being like him, is the path through Imam Ali alayhi salam and his successors, the other 11 imams. And then there's a hadith by Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq that says, one who follows someone should strive to emulate him. So, love is complementary. You love what the beloved loves. You hate what the beloved hates. And you hate that which threatens the perfection of the beloved or threatens the existence of the beloved itself. Now we get to the subject of oppression. What does love got to do with it? What does love got to do with oppression? With supporting the oppressed? Love is something hierarchical. Love is something hierarchical. And in our scheme of things, there are many different hierarchies we could envision, but in our scheme of things, the love of Allah is paramount. Below that is the love of the Prophet. Below that is the love of the A'imma. And below that is the love of the awliya, of those friends of Allah. And below the awliya is a love for the mu'mineen, the good people among us. And each one is related to the other. You cannot love the imams if you don't love the awliya. And you can't love the awliya if you don't love the mu'mineen. You know, we say manners begins at home. All good qualities begin at home and end abroad. If you're not trained properly in your home, you cannot be a good citizen outside. And this is what this system is trying to do, bring filth inside our living rooms, so what we have are deficient and delinquent people outside there. Now, the mu'mineen have rights upon you. For example, Amr Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar, commanding to right and forbidding the wrong. If I cannot listen to my brother who has the right to tell me what is right and tell me not to do what is wrong, I cannot listen to anybody above him. So it is a figment of the imagination if we say, I love Imam, I commit myself to Imam Mahdi, but I don't want to have anything to do with these Muslims out there or this organization or this or that. Or when a brother or a sister tells you something that you should do that is right because they are a law status, and you know, maybe I might wear the imama and this one I might not, so how dare you talk to me like that? Or I am 60 years old and you are 20. You won't be able to talk to Imam Mahdi or listen to him. Because on this ground level, we have the practice. Now, the Prophet loves Allah. And in loving Allah, he loves what Allah loves and hates what Allah hates. And this goes back to the ayah that I quoted before, that Allah does not love the oppressors. So if we love the Prophet, then we would not love the oppressors. And why? What is oppression? What is oppression? Oppression is any force or activity that prevents a thing from reaching its perfection or self-realization. Oppression is that which prevents us from reaching perfection or self-realization. We have a stereotype understanding of oppression. When we think of oppression, we always think of guns, people in jail, multinational corporations, taking your wealth, and this type of thing. This is true. This is oppression. But this is not the only form of oppression. In fact, this is one of the lowest forms of oppression. In fact, this is one of the manifestations of oppression. Oppression is anything that prevents you from arriving at your perfection, your perfect spiritual and physical state. By simply having a negative attitude to the truth. One can be an oppressor by simply having a negative attitude to the truth. In this society, people don't see that as oppression. Because oppression in this society is something that is always tangible. But you could be an oppressor upon your own self. Allah says in the Holy Quran, وَمَنْ أَظْلَمُ مِمَّنْ ذُكِّرَ بِآيَاتِ رَبِّهِ فَأَعْرَضَ عَنْهَا وَنَسِيَ مَا قَدَّمَتْ يَدَاهُ. And who is more unjust? And who is more unjust than he who, being reminded of the signs of his Lord, turns away from them and forgets what his hands have forwarded? Who could be more unjust than somebody who individually, on his own, turns away from the signs of his Lord? Here's a prophet coming and presenting Islam to that person. He's turning away from it. He himself, he isn't doing anybody anything. And this is what the argument people use, Right? This guy, the argument about homosexuality, for example. They're not doing anything to anybody. They're just doing their own thing. They ain't bothering you. They just want their rights, maybe talk about dad and mom and mom, just like you want to be taught about mom and dad. It is an attitude. Oppression involves also an attitude against the truth. And who are they unjust to? They are unjust to their own selves. They oppress their own selves. And today, the most pernicious form of oppression, therefore, is not mental. Sorry, it's not physical. It's mental. It's cultural. It's changing our point of view on the world. It's changing the point of view from creation to evolution. It's changing our point of view from universal truth to relative truth. It's changing our point of view from a spiritual understanding of reality to a scientific understanding of reality. This is what we're dealing with right now. We're dealing with new idols. Idols that are freedom. The idol of democracy. The idol of progress. and all of them in materialistic terms. And while I say this, I'm sure a lot of you here are squirming when I mention democracy. Oh my God, what's he talking about? Tyranny. He supports tyranny. And freedom. Freedom is only true when you are able to go beyond the freedom of the slavery of your own passions, the tyranny of your own passions. This is true freedom. We live in a society that talks about freedom, but makes everybody a slave to their own passions. We live in a society that talks about democracy simply because all opinions are equal, including a belief in God. And so in an environment like that, where truth is relative, definitely the majority opinion has the right to rule. And so we believe in these things. We participate in this new form of idol worship. Even though we see at the same time that the people who champion these words don't believe in them themselves. War in Iraq is a very good example. Why they wanted to have regime change in Iraq, they tolerate the same non-democratic regime in Saudi Arabia. Why don't they talk about self-determination? They want to control your resources. It's an error to argue with these guys on their own basis. Salawat. In this society, if you are enjoying what you're doing, it is not considered oppression. If you're enjoying what you're doing, you're not oppressing anybody, or you're not, you know, having anything to do with anybody. But if you are enjoying what you're doing, you're not being oppressed. So you enjoy what you're listening to, filth on MTV, for example. You don't know what you're doing. People say, no, he's okay, he's not being oppressed. But you are being oppressed by oppressing your own selves. So when we talk about supporting the oppressed, the most fundamental task that we have to do is to educate people. To educate people to the realities of things. And you can't educate people to the realities of things if we ourselves are not in touch with reality. And to be in touch with reality, we have to change ourselves. If we want to be guided by the Imam, first of all, we must make ourselves accessible to this guidance. And to make ourselves accessible to this guidance means that we must have some kind of complementary relationship with him. When we have that complementary relationship with him, we will be able to be just in terms of supporting the oppressed. What the brother was talking about, what Brother Iskander was talking about, was right on the mark. I've seen Shia communities that go out and do tabligh, dawah, among oppressed communities, but do not want them to come into their mosque. Because when they come into their mosque, they want to marry my daughter. I went to one Islamic center here in England, somewhere. You know, maybe you might know it as I describe it. And you know, Islam is spreading in the prisons. So you had this bunch of roughneck brothers coming out of the prison and coming to the Shia mosque. And them brothers were hard, man. These brothers would go to the Wahhabi mosque on a Friday and stand in the front row and put their mohr down there. And nobody would dare try to pick up that turban from the ground. They were so bad. They were beautiful. But you know something? The Shias were just as terrified of these guys as the Wahhabis. Oh my God. Next thing you know, the police have been coming to our mosque. I remember some African-American brothers in my city got a space to have meetings in a mosque. And one of the first things they asked them is, I hope you guys are not going to sell weed here. I went to Barbados, first time, walking around and I see the Muslim community. There was apartheid in Barbados. I think it's still there. They got the Pakistani mosque. I don't know where these guys are from. I think they're Pakistani or Indian or something. Right? But they got their mosque like in the city, and the locals got their mosque on the other side of the town. This isn't love. This is not love. You can't support the oppressed if you don't love them. And you can't love them without being like them, without being one of them. When you look at the life of the Prophet and the Imam, you will see that the way they lived was very much in sync with the most deprived from among their followers. There's a story of the Shia aristocracy coming to meet Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, and say, "Ah, we are your Shia, and you know we came to bring the combs and so forth and so on." He says, "You are my Shia?" He says, "Okay, go into that oven." He's like, "What? Go into the oven? You mean it's lit? You got a fire in there?" "No, you better be kidding. He told a slave, go into the oven." The slave went into the oven, and after a while came out smiling. He said, "That's my Shia." I think that's a signal. So, to conclude, brothers and sisters, without love, we cannot support the oppressed. I want to stand up here and tell you about strategies in dealing with the oppressed or not. Helping the oppressed is not like, you know, going out there and giving out blankets or giving out food and eat. That's good. Do it. Could we be said to be the followers of Imam Mahdi? And could we really be in a state of waiting to be a positive help to him? If we are not in that state, we are, as Brother Iskandar said, the people of Kufa. And for the very same reason why he disappeared. And if he shows up today, we are going to kill him. We are going to kill him. We are going to fight with him. We're going to argue with him. So it's no surprise that when he comes, a lot of heads are going to roll, especially among us, the ulama. To know him, let us try to walk in his shoes. And to walk in his shoes means taking on the characteristics of the Holy Quran, listening to their words and putting them into practice, and then we'll be in sync with him, and then he himself will guide us in terms of supporting the oppressed. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allahumma kulli waliyyik al-hujjat ibn al-hasan صلواتك عليه وعلى وتمتعه فيه